Field versus David A. Becker et al.
May it please the court. David Baghdad on behalf of the plaintiff appellant, Judy Thiel. As your honors know, we're here contesting the district court's entry of an order denying the plaintiff's motion to vacate under Rule 60B of an earlier case dismissing for want of prosecution Ms. Thiel's civil rights action after we did not receive notice, my office did not receive notice of several scheduled status conferences. Although this court's review, of course, is discretionary, we believe that there are several essential factors that the district court failed to consider here. The determination, especially of excusable neglect, is an equitable one, taking all factors into account. As we've noted in the briefs, this court has granted relief in similar circumstances where excusable neglect was alleged, most notably the Beeson case, in which the plaintiff failed to attend a status conference, had a dismissal for want of prosecution entered, had that vacated, failed to attend another conference, and had another DWP entered. This court overturned the court's failure to vacate the second as an unnecessarily drastic remedy. In this case, we believe that the same is true. We never received the notices of the status call or of the anticipated dismissal. The court's order saying, look, you better get here or we're going to throw this case out. We found out about it after the fact.
Do you have any obligation, or does counsel have any, or does the client have any obligation to check into it on their own?
Well, I don't necessarily believe that the client has any obligation to check into it on her own, Your Honor, although in this case she did do so. Whether counsel has an obligation to check into it, it's certainly debatable. Well, counsel clearly has the obligation to follow the progress of the case and determine what it is that's going on. By the same token, we never got notices of scheduled status conferences or the notice of the fact that the court was considering dismissing for failure to attend a status conference. In addition, there's no indication that the court ever considered any lesser action prior to dismissal. There was no conduct on counsel's part, nor was there any showing that any less drastic sanctions had proven effective, because there were no less drastic sanctions, as this court has determined. In addition, this court has also determined in the Bluestein case that not only must counsel have knowledge of the fact that the continuing of that conduct may result in dismissal, but counsel must also appreciate the imminent threat that the dismissal is likely. Here, again, that never happened. Now, the district court, in denying the motion to vacate, made no findings other than the court's abrupt conclusion that the standards did not met and that Rule 60 did not fit. Under Circuit Rule 50, the court has to at least make some effort to explain the reasons for its action. And in this case, of course, that wasn't done. Therefore, essentially, this court has to attempt to see into the mind of the trial court to determine why it was that the court acted in such a way. Therefore, there's no basis for determining that, for assuring this court, in fact, that the trial court considered the important arguments and to know the reasons why the district court acted as it did. In addition, we believe that the court's order denying the motion to vacate was an unduly harsh sanction in that it foreclosed the opportunity to proceed on the merits. Obviously, the trial court, in entering such an order, has to balance several competing interests, the interests of keeping a manageable docket and ensuring that counsel and the litigants do what they're supposed to do, against the preclusion of cases to be heard on their merits. Now, to the extent that the court relied on its inherent powers in justifying its action, we don't know that that happened, although it's possible that the inference would suggest such, because again, the district court didn't explain its reasons for doing what it was that it did. It just said, this case doesn't fit Rule 60 without
more. Did counsel ask the court for its reasons?
I don't recall whether I made the specific statement that...
Well, it doesn't make sense that you ask him.
Well, in most cases of this type, Your Honor, I would expect...
Or are you just trying to sandbag?
Not at all. I would expect in a case such as this, the district court would enter a written order saying, this is what I'm doing and here's why I'm doing it.
You were in court?
I was in court.
And you couldn't ask him any questions as, what is your reasoning behind this? I disagree.
Your Honor, it's generally my practice in the district court that when a judge renders an opinion saying, this is what I'm doing, then one does not challenge the court on the spot to provide reasons for what it is that the court does. I believe that such conduct would be an affront to the court, even if I disagree strenuously with what the court does. The proper means is to challenge it by means of a motion to reconsider or to appeal the court's decision or both of which were done in this case. So I respectfully suggest that had I even done so, had I said to the district court, look, why are you doing this? Please give me the reasons why you're doing this. I don't know that would have elicited the reasons, and
but
I don't know that...
You missed five court callings, is that right?
I believe
you
it was
you saw the court dismiss it, and you didn't object at all. You didn't ask any questions about why, when, or how, or where.
Well, I understood that the court dismissed it for failure to attend the conferences, but again, we didn't get notice of the conferences. We brought that
to the court. Lost in your office.
Perhaps yes, perhaps no. Perhaps we
did
not.
Perhaps yes or no.
We don't know that.
Did you give that answer that you had a lot of receptionists turning over and this could have caused a problem?
I submitted an affidavit to that effect, as did the plaintiff. The fact that we had no knowledge of the fact that these conferences were set.
And at no time did you call the court?
I did receive calls from the court on at least one occasion, as I indicated in the affidavit, to the effect that there was a...
I said you did not call the court yourself to say what's happening with my case.
I have no recollection of doing so, Your Honor.
Can't you answer yes or no?
I don't believe I did.
Okay.
Mr. Bagdell, why should the court pay any attention to your affidavit? You filed an affidavit of service in this case, which you now concede is false.
I actually did not concede that at all, Your Honor.
Your brief in this case says service was effected sometime in September, and in
Correct.
Response to the motion to strike, you conceded that service was not made in September. You contend, however, that it was made in October.
I believe I contended what it was that when we filed the brief originally on the 20th, we received a deficiency notice.
Yes.
And there was an accompanying proof of service with the brief originally.
Proof of service says it was served on September 20th.
And it was served, in fact, I believe later in September when we submitted the corrected form with the...
You can't file an affidavit saying I served on date X unless you actually served on date X.
Then the appropriate measure would have been to submit a corrected proof of service of the brief. With due respect, Your Honor, that has
now,
nothing to do...
You may know that when we get a motion for sanctions, as in this case, one thing we do is look up the lawyer's sanctions history. And that led us to try to look up yours. And one thing we were puzzled by is that we can't find that you're a member of our bar, or indeed of the state bar, or indeed of any bar anywhere in the United States. Of what bar are you a member?
I'm a member of the Illinois Bar of the General Bar of the District.
Do you have an explanation for why your name is not on the master roll of attorneys admitted to practice in Illinois?
Unless my license fee has not been paid for year 2002.
Well,
I've received standing letters with
anybody. Anybody whose name is not on the master roll is not allowed to practice in Illinois, and your name is not on the master roll. Nor is it on the role of attorneys admitted to practice in this court.
Your Honor, my application to practice in this court was submitted in 1997.
And when was it granted?
It was my understanding it was granted shortly thereafter.
Did you get any notification?
I believe I did. I was with
you believe or you did? You did or you didn't?
I seem to recall getting it, Your Honor. This
did
was 5 years ago.
Did you pay the fee?
Ago.
You seem to recall getting
the firm that I was with at the time paid the fee, yes. I personally
you might
did not.
You're giving me a lot of dull answers.
You might find it in your interest to demonstrate as quickly as practical that you are a member of our bar.
I certainly
and
will
authorized to practice in Illinois.
I certainly will do that.
You might be aware, by the way, that you are also not listed in Martindale-Hubbell, nor is your firm listed in Martindale-Hubbell. It's extremely difficult to track down your background, Mr. Bagdell.
Well, I will certainly provide the court with that information.
We may find it necessary to open some further proceedings here.
To check into it.
Thank you.
All right, counsel.
May it please the court. The issue in this appeal is whether or not the district court abused its discretion when it denied the plaintiff's Rule 60B motion for relief from the order dismissing the case for want of prosecution. At no time was there a notice of appeal filed from the original dismissal order. As such, the merits of that order are not properly before this court, except as it relates to the limited purpose of determining whether or not the dismissal order was fundamentally unjust. So this court has described circumstances where there is a Rule 60B motion denying a motion for dismissal or denying relief for dismissal for want of prosecution as an abuse of discretion piled upon abuse of discretion. And only if no reasonable judge would have denied the Rule 60B motion should this court reverse an order from the district court. Now certainly, after post-Pioneer from the Supreme Court, they have extended excusable neglect under Rule 60B to include some circumstances of attorney neglect. And that, however, neither the Supreme Court nor any case in this circuit has extended that to include all instances of attorney neglect. After Pioneer, the rule still is an inexcusable failure to monitor a case is not excusable neglect, which would warrant relief under Rule 60B. And it is the plaintiff or the person who is seeking relief under Rule 60B who has the obligation to come forward to this court and bring the reasons why it's excusable neglect. Now, Pioneer sets forth some certain factors that should be considered by a district court in these circumstances. And not before the district court nor before this court has the plaintiff discussed those factors or the facts of this case as it relates to those factors. And therefore, for that reason alone, the district court can be affirmed because the plaintiff has failed to meet her burden for establishing excusable neglect. However, when you look at the facts of this case compared to those factors under Pioneer, it is clear that there is no excusable neglect in this case. Those factors are the danger of prejudice, the length of delay, the potential impact on the proceedings, and significantly, the Supreme Court has said the disarray in a lawyer's office is not to be considered or given much weight. In this case, the incident giving rise to this lawsuit happened in 1997 in October. The lawsuit was filed in March of 2000, and then nothing was done on this case at all until the district court dismissed it in October of 2000. It was dismissed after the court issued a rule to show cause. Now, before the district court, plaintiff's counsel specifically instructed the district court that he could not dispute the fact that the clerk had sent notices of the status dates, nor could he dispute the fact that his office may have received them. He explained to the court that he was having problems with office help in his office, and that was the reason given for why he did not personally view those notices. But in addition, in this case, there was also no service on the defendant. So the defendants maintained there was no service, and certainly there is no evidence in the record to establish that service was ever made on the defendants. There was no discovery initiated by the plaintiff. There was nothing done by the plaintiff to move this case along in the court's docket during the 7-month period that the case was pending in front of the court. There was no calls made to the clerk's office. There was no review of the law bulletin. There was no check of the court computers here. And I don't exactly recall when internet service first began so that attorneys could check the court computers from their own offices, but certainly that wasn't done either. It was available back in 2000, which I believe the RACER system was. Fletcher, as there is evidence that at least the plaintiff herself was aware of the scheduled status dates. During questioning at the hearing on the Rule 60 motion, the district court asked the plaintiff herself, well, why was it that you decided to call the clerk's office on this particular day to learn where you learned that the case had been dismissed? And she responded that it seemed like every time she had a court date, it was to be continued, and every time she was ready, willing, and able to be present. Now, that statement certainly suggests that the plaintiff herself learned from some source that this matter was up on the court status call on more than one occasion, yet nobody appeared. In addition, Your Honor, the Rule 60 motion was untimely. Rule 60 requires that the motion be filed within 1 year, and it also requires that it must be filed within a reasonable time. The 1 year period is the outside limitation. In this case, both the plaintiff and her attorney knew of the dismissal order within 30 days of the entry of that order. Yet, there was nothing done with respect to Rule 60 until over 3 months later, after we had gone through a whole process of filing a second complaint that was dismissed on race judicata grounds. And I submit that this is very similar to the case of Sparrow versus Heller, which was cited in the appellee's brief, where a similar instance occurred where an attorney made a mistake upon the effect of a judgment entered in a case and decided to do something with respect to filing before they filed the Rule 60 motion. In that case, it was 2 months, and that was considered untimely. With respect to the reasonings for the district court's decision to deny the Rule 60 motion, the district court could have been more clear and set it out more clearly, but when you look at the totality of the questions asked by the district court during the hearing, it was clear that he was aware of the factors set forth in Pioneer, and he was applying those factors to the case. He verified that the clerk's office had mailed the notices. He verified counsel's address. He asked the plaintiff questions concerning how she learned of the dismissal, when she learned of the dismissal, why they waited more than 90 days to file the Rule 60 motion. He also questioned the lack of service and questioned the lack of discovery that had been conducted in the case or anything that had been done in the case during the pendency. Circuit Rule 50 requires that explanation be provided so that counsel and this court can determine the basis for the ruling. And when you look at the hearing and the transcript from the hearing, it's clear that the court did apply the Pioneer Rule. In addition, where the correct resolution is fairly clear, Circuit Rule 50 should not act as a bar to remand the case back to the circuit court. I see my time is up, and my colleague will address the Rule 59 portions of this case.
May it please the court, Gunnar Gunnarsson for Appalese, Lucas, and Jeffers. I'd like to address the issue of the denial of the Rule 59 motion by the district court. The Rule 59 motion was not timely, first of all. It has to be filed within 10 days of the entry of judgment. Judgment was entered in October of 2000. The Rule 59 motion was filed in February of 2001. Even if the Rule 59 motion were timely, the appellant did not argue the issue on appeal in his opening brief. Therefore, I think that issue would be waived. And then finally, with respect to the merits of the court's decision on the Rule 59 motion, even if the issue is not waived, and even if the motion was timely, the plaintiff did not present any newly discovered evidence, nor did she show the court that it had made a manifest error of fact or law. All the plaintiff did was rehash the same issues as she did in her motion to vacate. Your Honors, respectfully, I think this case boils down to whether a district court can dismiss a case for want of prosecution where the plaintiff does not appear on five straight status dates, does not appear at a rule to show cause when there's notice that the court is contemplating dismissing the case, does not do discovery, does not serve the complaint. All that is done is filing the complaint and then completely neglecting it. If that's not want of prosecution, Your Honors, I don't know what is. I respectfully then request that the decision of the district court be affirmed.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you. Do you have any identification at all on you from the Illinois bar or this bar?
I have my 2001 bar.
What? I have my 2001 Illinois bar. But not the
2002.
Thank you. We will take the case under advisement and proceed to case number